Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Combine, primetime edition. It got underway last night. And while it still feels a little surreal to be watching guys working out at night up against young Sheldon, it delivered. Man, it was good. It didn't matter that the two most talked about prospects in the draft, Joe Burrow and Tua, did not work out. There was still plenty to see. Justin Herbert from Oregon did exactly what you'd expect him to do. If you didn't know Utah State's Jordan Love before last night, you probably do now. The dude's got a cannon. He might be working his way into becoming a top 10 pick. Then there was Jalen Hurts. Remember him? He reminded everybody he's pretty damn good too. He ran a 4.59, 40, second best among quarterbacks. He tied for the lead with the longest broad jump, which to me continues to be one of the more bizarre events at the combine. And the ball did look good coming off his hand in passing drills. But as much as last night was going to be about the quarterbacks, it was also about the wide receivers, in particular, the big three. Alabama's Jerry Jeudy, Oklahoma's CeeDee Lamb, and Alabama's Henry Ruggs III. And you've no doubt heard this, but time and time again, it's been said, it'll be said again right now, this is a really good class, a deep class of receivers. And every guy brings something a little bit different to the table. You've got Henry Ruggs III going in the 40, looking to break the all-time combine record. Even if you don't follow things this closely, you know the all-time combine record belongs to John Ross, who ran a 4.22.
That was easy. He made that look easy. 4.28, can of corn.
Wow.
And he's not happy either. I guarantee he's not happy with 4.28.
Can of corn. Good news, great time. Bad news, it does not break the record. Somewhat worse news, Ruggs had to ice down his quad. He was done for the night. That meant that in the receiving drills, hit that with some ibuprofen. Ice and ibuprofen. That meant that in the receiving drills, it was down to Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb among the receivers. And to the extent that you have to declare a winner among the receivers, it probably has to be Lamb for this circus catch.
Now you're CeeDee Lamb, Jeudy Lamb, man, back to back.
What if we see one of them on this field in the fall with the Colts?
Okay. All right. Little twist.
So how deep is this receiving class? You have Chase Claypool from Notre Dame doing this. Now keep in mind, before I roll this, there's been talk of moving Claypool from wide receiver to tight end in the NFL. Keep that in mind. Now you can roll it.
Could this be your finding Debo right here?
He's over 6'4". Like that's...
I know. But Debo is a business decision, man.
Yeah, no question.
4-3. He created a lot of business decisions coming downhill like he did for San Francisco.
All right, so that dude, Chase Claypool, ran a 4.42. Chase Claypool is 6'4 and a quarter, 238 pounds. And that same guy ran a 4.42. According to NFL research, the only other receiver that big to run that fast at the combine, Calvin Johnson. The same Calvin Johnson I spoke with Charles Davis about yesterday. When Megatron did that back in 07, it nearly knocked the combine off its axis. So I don't care if you have Claypool as a receiver or a tight end or as a gunner on special teams, which he also did in college. If you've got a guy that big and that fast, you better find a way to get him on the field. Anyway, anyhow. And if we're being real, the biggest star of the night was not Claypool. Not Ruggs, not Lamb, not Hurts, not Herbert. It was Turk. Michael Turk, the punter from Arizona State. And let me preface this by saying, if you're a punter who leaves college with 2 years of eligibility left to enter the draft, man, you better be special. And this guy is special. He was the only kicker or punter to get in on the bench. Now, you might think that might go pretty badly, right? Except this guy crushed it. I'm going to play the clip. For all of you listening on radio, there's not a ton of audio, so I need you to just picture in your head the bar. The bar weighs 225, and it's popping off this guy's chest on every single rep. And to really give you that feeling, I might ask Alvy to spice it up just a little bit.
Let the bodies hit the
Let's go to work.
All the way up. Finish.
It ain't hard play down. You ain't cheating me, you're cheating you.
Lock him out. Finish each round. Yeah. Finish each round.
Come on. If you have serious fight, lay it out. Lay it out.
Oh, 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 man, let's go. Hustle, man, what's up? Oh, yeah, I got the dancing bag. Get yourself.
Come on. Give me that. Give me that. Come on.
Uh-oh.
25 reps.
Oh, crap. That punter was jacked. Good job, Albie. 25 reps at 225, and he made it look easy. The bar was bouncing. Made it look like he was lifting a toothpick. Punter Nation. Stand the hell up. Steve Weatherford has got to be so fired up to see that. To quote Scott Cochran, if it feels good, you ain't doing it right.
If it feels good, you ain't doing it right.
Yeah, well, that felt damn good, and he was doing it damn right. And do not come in here with that tired take of, yeah, not bad for a punter. That was awesome. That was awesome for anybody playing any position. How do I know? Because his 25 reps were more than any receiver yesterday. They were more than all but one tight end. In fact, those 25 reps were more than Frank Clark did when he was at the Combine, more than Jadeveon Clowney, more than DeMarcus Lawrence, more than Chandler Jones. Hell, the 25 that he put up, better than Michael Bennett. Michael Turk beat Michael Bennett by a rep.
Bennett.
If he reps that hard on the bench, what does that guy squat? How much does he deadlift? Quick. Add those events to the combine. I want to see this punter Bulgarian split squatting. I want to see sumo deadlifts. What's he rep for the sumo deadlift high pull? Better yet, how does football survive when his foot makes contact with them? And if that name Turk sounds familiar when it comes to guys crushing punts, it should, because his uncle, Matt Turk, did it for 17 years in the league. And I'm not freaking out because this dude is some kind of weight room warrior. It says here, this guy is no Mike Mamula. He's got the game to back it up and the tape. He's an all Pac-12 punter. He broke the school record for average punt at 46 yards per. Then he broke the bench press yesterday. Like, I don't know where you had Michael Turk on your draft board before yesterday, but you better move this guy up. You better have him moving up right now. Michael Turk, legend. Weatherford, the Scottish Hammer, Pat McAfee, Chris Jones, and my guy, Todd Sauerbrunn. It is time to welcome Michael Turk to the fraternity of not only being great punters, but absolute badasses. The punter, Bucky Brooks, is back. Bucky, it's good to have you. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. Bucky, I thought last night was really good under the lights and in prime time. So off the very top, what were some of the moments that stuck out to you from night one of the combine workouts?
Well, I mean, obviously it's all about the quarterback. And so we didn't get a chance to see Joe Burrow or Tua Tagovailoa throw, but all eyes were on Jordan Love and Justin Herbert. And I think both guys were impressive in their own way. I think for Justin Herbert, it is just the combination of size, athleticism, and arm talent. The arm talent was on display last night. He probably threw it as well as anybody in the building. And so when you start thinking about who is going to be the next guy, because you assume that Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa are going to be the first two off the board, the battle is really between Herbert and Love. I think Herbert certainly did himself well. And then Jordan Love just kind of continues the conversation. Could he be like the next Pat Mahomes, meaning the next sandlot player that may not put a consistent performance in college, but somehow it pops in the pros? There are a lot of people that are intrigued and smitten by the arm talent. The more that he throws it, the more people get around him, the more they like him. So we'll see, because both of these guys could find themselves coming off the board in the top 15.
Great stuff. Bucky Brooks joining us. Bucky, one more thought about Love. He didn't have that great final season at Utah State, but you've written about the fact that one of the things that you learned from Ron Wolf was you have to dig deeper on quarterbacks. What did he mean by that, and how do you apply that to Love?
Well, you have to look at the entire body of work. You have to see what were the reasons for the lack of production the final year as opposed to the previous year. When you look at the previous year, the numbers he put up were outstanding. Like, if he had those kind of numbers this year, we would be talking about him as like a top five pick. And so he had a change in coaching staff. He lost a lot of guys and perimeter players on the outside. And so as he was adjusting, he self-admittedly said, hey, I tried to do too much. I played a little too much hero ball, and it impacted my consistency. And so when you begin to look at that and you just take the talent for the talent, he certainly is a top-10 talent. Now it's a matter of where does he really fit, and can you get him going and playing at a high level?
Nearly everybody I know has trouble sleeping, and frankly, I'm no different. Do you fit into that? Are racing thoughts overtaking your night of sleep? Are you tired of not being able to sleep? Do you have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep? If so, it is time for you to try Ebb. If you've tried everything from pills to pillows with little success, it is time for you to try Ebb. Ebb is the first and only wearable, drug-free solution that targets the root cause of sleeplessness, the racing thoughts. Ebb applies precise and continuous cooling to the forehead, which calms your mind, and it's clinically validated. 4 out of 5 users report falling asleep faster and improving overall sleep quality. And Ebb allows people suffering from sleeplessness to drift more comfortably into a deeper, more restorative sleep. Ebb Sleep is designed to work with your natural sleep-wake rhythms to allow you to get into that deep sleep more quickly. Have the energy to do the things you love once again by getting the sleep you need. Ebb's natural solution has no morning side effects and allows you to get back to your peak performance. Right now, you can try Ebb risk-free for 60 nights to confirm that it is the solution that you've been looking for. Go to tryebb.com/Rome. That's TryEbb.com/Rome. TryEbb.com/Rome. Order today. Get the sleep that you need and the sleep you deserve. We're talking to Bucky Brooks. You also spoke with Jalen Hurts last night after he was done. What did you make of the way he showed up, and how did he seem to you after he was done?
You know, man, the more people get around him, the more I think they want to like him. You just love the kid because the intangibles are off the charts. You talk about a guy who's been at 2 blue blood programs, led both of those guys into the playoffs, had to deal with his own set of adversity, losing the starting job, transferring and doing all the stuff. But he continues to kind of stand up and be an accountable guy. And then when you looked at the arm talent last night, he threw the ball much better than most people would imagine. And you can begin to envision him kind of playing like a Dak Prescott at the next level, where right situation, right coach, where you just need someone to kind of get the team to the winner's circle, where he's done that as well as anybody. I think he's going to be a surprise pick. I would expect him to come off the board around on day 2.
Bucky Brooks breaking down the combine with us. And then you look at the receivers in the class. It seems like the debate comes down to Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb. Coming into the combine, you had Jeudy ahead of Lamb. What gave him the edge in your mind?
Just a cleaner route runner. What we've seen in the last couple of years, the young guys that have success right away at receiver are the guys that are polished route runners, guys that can come in and consistently get open. And Jerry Jeudy, he's a guy that can play 3 spots. He can play split in, flanker, play in the slot. He can do everything. He has outstanding route running ability, but he also has the stop, start quickness and burst to make plays in the open field. And CeeDee Lamb, you have a terrific playmaker, meaning you just want to get him the ball and let him work. You saw some of the pass catching ability that he displayed last night. He has great hands, great hand-eye coordination, does a great job of coming out with these acrobatic catches. I think the big thing with him is he plays the game a little bit like DeAndre Hopkins, but he has a little more sizzle. Both are terrific players. It really just comes down to what style receiver do you want to be your number one. But both of those guys can handle the job.
Talking to Bucky Brooks for a few more moments. And then where do you come out on Henry Ruggs III? For instance, he had a huge showing in the 40, but as NFL research pointed out on Twitter, the last 6 receivers to run a sub-4.3 at the combine have not exactly had huge NFL careers. So when you look at Ruggs, does it feel like he might be different and he might be a guy different than the other speed guys who came before him?
It's all about the utilization. People will talk about Ruggs maybe being up there. Maybe he goes before Jeudy or a CeeDee Lamb because of speed. But the difference is he's a guy that is more of a complementary weapon, not a guy that you build the passing game around. He is someone that if you have him established number one receiver on one side of the field, he can be the guy that takes the top off the coverage. He can be the vertical stretch player. He can be the guy that does the explosive thing. Don't know if he's capable of handling the load as a number one receiver. And that's why it's really important that whoever takes him understands exactly who he is and uses him like he was used at Alabama. there's a reason why Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide used Jerry Jeudy as the number one, and he was the guy that was kind of the occasional playmaker. Jerry Jeudy's skill set is more conducive to handling the load, where his skills are more conducive to being an explosive playmaker that delivers these chunk plays on occasion.
Bucky Brooks is breaking it down. All right, what about the running backs before you go, Bucky? They go tonight. What do you think when you watch DeAndre Swift on tape?
Yeah, man, he's a natural. He is as good as we find that we'll find at the position. He is smooth. He's explosive. Plays a good balance and body control. Does a great job running inside and outside. He can catch the ball out the backfield. I know there's been a bit of a devaluation of the running back position, but of all the guys that I believe is a first-round talent, he is a first-round talent. I think when you look at him, you can see him as kind of like that franchise running back, even though we've seen teams win and win at a high level with a cast of characters kind of manning the position.
Bucky, I talked to your guy, DJ, Daniel Jeremiah, and we talked about the league starting to embrace the notion of guys playing multiple positions. As an example, when you look at Isaiah Simmons and his versatility, what kind of a player do you see? For instance, what's his best position, or do you not even worry about that with somebody like that?
You know, it's a debate, right? Because scouts will tell you, hey, don't worry about it. Let's bring him in and then figure it out. Coaches will tell you it's hard sometimes to play with a guy like that. Isaiah Simmons is so dynamic, so versatile. He played, according to Football Focus, five different positions he spent 100 or more snaps at. Inside linebacker, outside linebacker, slot corner, free safety, strong safety. So he can do a lot. I think he's best suited to play linebacker in today's game. Put him where he can match up over tight ends, allow him to run and chase and make plays as a blitzer. That's the best way you use Isaiah Simmons.
Hey, Bucky, one thing. I remember you wrote that watching Simmons reminded you a little of when you were part of the Carolina front office that drafted Thomas Davis. What do you remember about that process, and did you know how good he could be?
Okay, with Thomas Davis, we drafted him because he was a big, super athlete, and we thought that he could play safety. And we put him at safety, and he wasn't built for it. Even though he's big, fast, and athletic, he should have been a linebacker. So the rookie season became a weight for them. We eventually put him at the spot where he deserved. And what we did is we just put him at linebacker his second season, and after that, that's when the game kind of popped.
Bucky, one quick thing I want to ask you, because you played the game at the highest level, you have worked at the highest level, you're the head coach of Granada Hills Charter High School, as I mentioned. Why do you do that, and what do you like about working with high school kids?
This man is the best thing that I do, the best thing that I've ever done in terms of just being around young people, being a positive example, putting them in a situation where they're able to kind of use football as a vehicle to learn how to be successful. We have a great time. I think the community is unique because it's very diverse. When I look at the team is about 50% Asian, 30% Latino, and 10% black and white. And so when you have that kind of kaleidoscope of people, it kind of gives us an opportunity to have unique experiences. It's been a terrific experience, and I'm just looking forward to doing more and more stuff in the community for that team.
That's really cool. NFL Network's coverage of the 2020 NFL Scouting Combine continues this evening at 4 p.m. Eastern. You've got the running backs, the offensive linemen, and the specialists. Bucky Brooks is an NFL Network analyst and all over it. Bucky, thank you so much. Really appreciate you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
When they pay you to talk bleep, crack on a few people, and interview athletes and coaches, then there are no bad days. But some are a little better than others, and I just had a feeling when I rolled out of the rack this morning that today was going to be one of those days. Now, before I lay out why, or impart why today is a good day, why don't we go back a little bit? Let's go back to November 15th, 2019, a little over 3 months ago. Let's go to Lawrence, Kansas, where the underdog Monmouth Hawks were in town to play the big, bad, blue-blooded Jayhawks. And frankly, that game went exactly the way you would expect a game to go between Monmouth and Kansas. And with 25 seconds left, KU led by 55. The massive home favorite then went into basketball's version of the victory formation and attempted to dribble out the clock. And all that stood between them and a 110-55 beatdown was a few ticks on the lamp and a soon-to-be legend by the name of George Pappas. And if you thought that George Pappas of Monmouth U was just going to sit back and watch KU take a knee on his beloved school and program, then you don't know George Pappas. because George Pappas did one of the most awesome things I have ever seen with a few ticks left in a 55-point blowout.
KU doesn't have to shoot. If it ends right now, it's going to be a doubled-up final tally. I think that's where it's going to end. Tristan Inarritu has it taken away by Pappas as he was trying to dribble out the clock. And Pappas throws down a dunk and then gets up in Inarritu's face. He's going to get teed up, and he should. KU was doing the classy thing and running out the clock. Pappas then comes in, takes the ball away, throws a dunk, and then talks trash. He needs to get back to New Jersey with that type of attitude.
Man, that audio from the butthurt KU broadcast crew is just fantastic. But the video is so much better. Freaking George Pappas pickpocketing the rock, down 55, sprinting to the other end, elevating to outer space, and flushing it home over a shock defender to cut that lead to 53. One of the best things I have ever seen. And it only got better when Pappas yelled not once, but twice, quote, "I don't give an F. I don't give an F." At this point, I got to admit, I'm actually in awe of the kid. But apparently, the refs were not, because they teed him up for that profane outburst. Then KU hits both free throws to get it right back to 55, and that was it. Ball game, KU 112, Monmouth 57. Now, if you know me, you know this show, you know that I am the biggest proponent of scoreboard ever. It literally is the very first premise, the first thought that I brought with me to my first radio broadcast. It's not something I made up either. I mean, anybody who's ever played sports on any level knows this concept, the notion of scoreboard. Scoreboard, look up at it. It's the only thing that matters. I'll stand by that. But you tell me who really won here. Who really won that night? The answer is George Pappas and the American viewing public. Now, if you were listening that day, you might recall, I said that then. I never, ever wear jerseys. I don't even own a jersey. I'm a middle-aged dude who does not root. There is no way I would ever rock somebody else's jersey. I haven't worn a jersey since I was 12. And then I saw George Pappas' act. And I said that night, or the next morning, you get me this kid's gamer. Get me this kid's gamer stat, and I'll rock that thing right here on the show. Now, it should be noted that I was pretty much standing alone in the sports landscape as the only person, well, the only person who mattered, who loved this guy's act. Pretty much everybody else went in on him for being Bush League, for his horrible sportsmanship, for having no class. And to this moment, I still have no idea why. Play the game until the game is over. He not only played, he dunked on a dude down 55 with 5 seconds left and then mother bleeped the world. Twice. That's wrong. That's wrong. That's wrong. You're wrong. Because nothing's better than that. If that's wrong, I don't want to be right. Why are Big G and Van Smack the only people in the world who seem to understand this? So, some time goes by, and I never heard anything from Pappas or Monmouth. And trust me when I tell you, it's probably not that easy to find a George Pappas gamer on the internet. In fact, I know it's not. I tried. I was looking. Fast forward to January 23rd. The phone rings during the show, and a woman named Alexis from New Jersey was claiming to be George Pappas' mom. Always dicey to try and vet something like that, but I was way too curious to let this person hang on the line for even one more second, so I just asked her straight up on the air if she was who she said she was, and I am really glad that I asked that question.
Hey, Tim Rome, how are you?
I'm great. So are you really George Pappas' mother?
I am Georgie Pappas' mother, the one and only.
That is great. So it's so nice to meet you. So what motivated you to make this phone call today, Alexis?
Well, first of all, Jim, I've been trying to get you that jersey. It's coming your way soon.
Love it. I will look forward to that, and I will wear it.
His father and I happened to be there at that epic moment when he pulled the trigger with the last 5 seconds and made the dunk. The steal, the dunk, the flex, the curse out, the tee, I guess you did everything you possibly could do in 5 seconds, right or wrong. It was exciting for all of us. If we could have changed it, we probably would have done without the flexing and the tee and the cursing. But it was a good moment for our family.
What happens when a moment like that puts your family in the spotlight and all of a sudden the Pappas family is viral?
Well, we loved the people that thought George was great. And the people that didn't think George was great, we were furious with. Because if you know George, you love him because he's got passion and he's got spunk and he doesn't quit. And I was very upset when the sports writers were saying that it wasn't classy. What do they know about what the last 5 seconds is in a game when you're playing against Kansas?
If I get that jersey, great. But that boy of yours better sign it, okay?
He's going to sign it. I got to call King Rice. I got to get a jersey. Thanks for being a fan. You know we are.
What an amazing telephone call that was. That was easily one of the best moments of the year so far. How do you top that? A fierce New Jersey mama coming into the jungle to back her son and tell every sports writer who dogged him to pound sand. Nobody better than Mama Pappas. And you heard her say she was going to get me that signed jersey. And I believed her. The Pappas family is a family of conviction, if you couldn't tell that already. So over a month passed since that phone call. Fast forward to yesterday. I'm walking to my mailbox on my way out of the office. And what do I see? A package. And where's that package from? It's from New Jersey. My eyes light up. I rip it open. I see the navy blue. I feel the synthetic cotton. I grab the piece of apparel out of an oversized envelope. I unfold it as quickly as I can. I hold it up. I see it in all its glory. Number 5, Monmouth Pappas, signed right on the number by Georgie Boy himself. Holy crap, it's here. An autographed George Pappas gamer. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, here it is, y'all. Check it out. There's the gamer. Pappas 5. Get a good shot. Get a good shot of it. He signed it. I mean, look at that thing. That thing belongs in the College Basketball Hall of Fame, yet here it is on my desk instead as a gift from the Pappas fam. I've been sent a lot of cool things in my life, but maybe nothing as cool as this. And I did say that I would wear it if they sent it. So give me a moment so I can throw this bad boy on. I told you. Hey, understand this. I have not put on a jersey. Maybe at a tour stop back in the day. I have not worn a jersey since I was 12. And now I've got the Pappas jersey on. And man, I can feel the power. There's some power in this gear. Like all of a sudden I feel like I can run and dunk again. I feel like I can steal the ball, down 55, run the length of the floor, get up and throw down on anybody and mother bleep the world.
He needs to get back to New Jersey with that type of attitude.
Look good, feel good. Feel good, play good. I'm feeling great, Georgie. Huge thank you to George Pappas for the jersey.
Georgie Pappas.
I'm going to wear it. That's Georgie Pappas. I'm going to wear this thing for a little while. And then when I'm done wearing this thing, I'm going to put it in a frame in the very near future.
Yeah!
Then we'll have that bad boy hanging in the studio for the rest of time. Huge thank you to Mama Alexis for calling in and making this happen. What a great phone call. Great follow through. She said it would happen. And great mama bear pride. I love that phone call that she made. Like no trepidation whatsoever. No fear, man. She just brought it. Like fierce New Jersey pride. Oh, and a huge thank you to King Rice for having George Pappas in the game when he did. None of this happens without him being on the floor turning Allen Fieldhouse into Pappas Fieldhouse. If you want to see what the greatest piece of sports memorabilia ever looks like, go to my Twitter feed. I'll put a picture up in the next break. And while you're on Twitter, go show Georgie Boy and Alexis some love. I'll tag them both in my next tweet. So big thanks to the Pappas family. You guys are the best. Even if those Jayhawk announcers are dead wrong and don't think that you are. I told you we'd have a little fun. Good jungle moment. 1-800-636-8686. I think I'll give you another look at that. How you like me now? How you like me now? And that guy with the gigantic head on the other side of the glass is trying to crane around to get a look. It's always, like, really weird about that. Like, why would I Never mind for a minute the business that I'm in. And don't take it the wrong way. I don't mean to disrespect anybody who wears somebody else's jersey. It's just not my thing. And if I weren't in the business, like, I got to stay objective so I don't do it. But even if I weren't in this business, I still would have stopped wearing other jerseys when I was 12. I'd go to games. I'd still love sports. This literally is the first jersey I've put on, I think, since I was 12. You like the way I accessorized? I knew I was going to wear this thing today. Just repping Monmouth U and George Pappas. 1-800-636-8686. Really quickly, let's go to the phones. Look who I found. Not George, but Alexis. Alexis, good morning. What's up? How are you?
Hey, Jim Rome. How are you?
So are you watching on TV right now? Can you see how I look in your son's jersey, or are you
no,
just listening?
No, I can't because I'm always in the car because I'm a mother and we never get to sit home and watch TV.
Well, take my word for it. I look great. Thank you so much for making that happen. I was starting to have my doubts about whether or not that jersey was going to come, but you did it, Alexis. You made it happen. Thank you so much.
Well, we're so happy that you're wearing it. Does it fit?
Fits perfectly. Like I said, man, I feel like I got power now. I feel like I can get up and down that floor and throw down on people and F-bomb people. I feel great. What was the process for getting it? How hard did you have to work?
Well, I didn't have the jersey. I had to call, you know, the coaching staff at Monmouth to get the jersey. And Rick Callahan is the assistant coach at Monmouth, and that's who my contact guy was, and he finally got it out to y'all. You know, basketball first, and then the jersey was second.
It is awesome. We got it here. I have, and I mean this sincerely, like, I have not worn anybody else's jersey since I was 12. I'm going to wear it a little while longer, like I promised, and I'm going to put this bad boy in a frame, and we're going to hang it on the wall.
Oh, I'm so happy for that. And I also want to tell everybody how proud we are of the Monmouth Hawks. It's been a great season. And I know a lot of people don't know about the MAC conference, but it's every game is really close and really good and really fun to go to. So maybe if any of your clones are in the Atlantic City area during March 11th, y'all can come to Atlantic City and see the MAC conference championship.
Alexis, you rule. And I hope they roll in that conference tournament, because to see them on the big stage in the NCAA tournament would be amazing. Alexis, thank you so much. Proud of you, proud of the fam, proud of your boy. And I appreciate the jersey. Alexis, coming through again. Todd Reardon is my guest. Todd, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. Thanks again for having me on. Always enjoy coming on your show.
Always good to have you on the show. Thanks so much, Todd. So you're coming off a home-and-home where you beat Winnipeg at home, then you lost to them on the road. In the rematch, Connor Hellebuck was huge for them, making 34 saves, getting the shutout. As a coach, is that one of those nights where maybe you run into a hot goalie and you tip your cap, or is there frustration that maybe you didn't make it tougher on him?
I'd say a little bit of a combination of both. We certainly had some good chances. But on the opportunities that we, other opportunities we had, I felt like we didn't make it quite as difficult as we could on them. And that goes back to a little bit of, our identity that we've had as a team here and why we've had success is, got some big bodies that want to play physical and be around the front of the net so we can, take away some of the sight lines for the goaltender. And I didn't think we got to the net front enough last night.
Todd Reardon joining us. All right. At the same time, you are in first place in the division. So overall, what do you make of where the team is at this point of the season with just over a month to go?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're still a work in progress. It's been, you know, a little bit of peaks and valleys within our season, got off to a really good start. And, you know, recently went through a little bit of a drop in our play. I think we're trending in the right direction. We were able to add two players during the trade deadline that I think are going to really help us. And as we get into, you know, the 18 to 15 games here left, we've got to continue to make a move in the right direction as the Metro Division. Yes, we are on top as we speak, but it is very competitive this year.
That's odd. The Athletic had a really interesting piece today about the stick exchange and the fact that before last year's playoffs, you showed a video of the great exchange in the Stanley Cup clinching game where you had a 4-3 lead. Brooks Orpik's stick snapped. A teammate gave him his stick, then went to the bench to get a new one and broke up the play. Why was that so important to you to show that video before the start of last year's playoffs?
Yeah, I think that, you know, everybody, not just the players, the staff, we're all in this together. And you need to have everybody on top of their game if you want to raise that Stanley Cup. And it was just it was twofold, actually. One, to show the training staff, the medical staff, everybody, how important their role is. That we show the players video all the time. Why would we not show our staff members video as well, positive and negative? And in addition to that, when you add some new members to your team or even new staff members, you want to show them, everyone has a role here. And if everyone does their role to the best of their ability, then we're going to give ourselves a great chance to have success because of the talent level we have. And I don't think that there should be any player put on a special pedestal just because he's able to score goals. And that stick exchange was just as important to helping us win that game five and clinching that Stanley Cup as some of the goals that were scored. So I know it's important for me to have everybody on board and push them in the right direction. And it's definitely a journey, and you have to do it together, in my opinion.
It's a great story. Todd Reardon joining us. And then Alexander Ovechkin scored the 700th goal of his career on Saturday, and then number 701 on Tuesday. I mean, Todd, when you think about the number of players who have played this game and the number of guys who have played it at the highest level and how few have reached that milestone, how significant is that number to you?
Oh, man. It's just amazing. It's been amazing to coach against this player and quite a bit, and then now to be able to coach him and see him every day. He is, beyond a generational talent, that's for sure, multi-generation, and what he's been able to do. How he's been able to do it, the size that he is, the fact that he's been, you know, basically able to do it, you know, without very few injuries, and it was just an awesome thing to be a part of, and to have him on our team was made it extra special. But it was a unique experience for sure, and glad to see that we've moved past it. I think this year's, I was here for 600 as well, and to see the 700th one, I think it's just taken on a little bit of a life of its own with the number of absolutely amazing players that he's passed recently, Hall of Famers, and, with Mario Lemieux and Mark Messier and a number of other guys that he's just passed on the goal-scoring list. And it just made 700 more special, and certainly he's a guy who works at his craft, and he's earned it. So it's a special thing to watch every day.
You know, he's earned that, but I wonder if he's gained the respect that he has earned. I mean, Todd, normally I would say it's so cliche and so tired to say, yeah, well, that guy doesn't get the respect that he deserves. But when you look at Alexander Ovechkin and the career he's had and the way he's done it, is he taken for granted, and does he get the respect he deserves?
That's a great question. I think that, when I watch there's a couple ways to answer that question, actually, because you watch how the opposition, comes up with different schemes and plans to how to stop them every night. So you think that, at least in the league presently, I know that there's respect, and they know that their game plan is that they give themselves a good chance to beat the Washington Capitals if you can keep him off the board. But I just think it's amazing what he's done and how he's done it. And like I said, he isn't a guy that's just going out there and scoring goals. He plays a physical game. He's found different ways to score goals. And now with coaching, more coaches on every bench than there ever have been in the past, more use of technology to help players coach and teach players to do things better. It's difficult to score in the league now. And it has been the last few years. And I think what he's done is amazing. And I think should be placed at the very top of all goal scorers when we get to the end here.
Todd Reardon joining me for a few more moments. Now, you mentioned some new faces. The team did add Ilya Kovalchuk in a trade with Montreal at the deadline. You and I talked last season, 1 year and one day ago, in fact, from right now, but we talked about the fact that you and he played together in Atlanta, and you started to learn Russian from him. So what's it like having him play for you?
Hockey's a crazy world like that. I think it's probably the fourth player that I've I'm coaching now. So there's not many of them left, Jim. So I'm getting older here. But we had a chance to add Ilya to our roster, and I just think that his resume speaks for itself in terms of the success he's had. He's been through a little bit of a crazy path recently with spending time in the KHL and coming back, but in terms of, you know, so that's what he does for our team and what he brings to our group, and is a guy that has done a lot in the game but never hoisted that Stanley Cup. So I think he's really driven to be able to do that. He saw how much fun Alexander Ovechkin had last year, or 2 years ago, excuse me, in Moscow with that Stanley Cup. So I think he's looking for some of that, but it's a unique world. It's a small world of hockey that now I end up coaching a player that, you know, I first kind of helped when he first got into the league as an 18-year-old. And, you know, it's funny to say, like I talked about a year ago, is I, you know, we used to exchange one Russian word for one English word every day. And it's really helped my coaching path because there are so many Russian players in the league. And now I've gone on to play other places after I got done playing in Atlanta with Ilya. I could speak some Russian with players, and then, you know, coaching in Pittsburgh and dealing with, you know, Evgeny Malkin and you know, Sergei Gonchar there. And then now my time here in Washington with Ilya Kovalchuk now obviously being here, but Evgeny Kuznetsov, Alex Ovechkin, you know, Orlov, we have a new goalie, Samsonov. So now the fact that I'm trying to learn their language, which is a very difficult one, and can communicate with them, that seems to go a long way with them. So it's, I trace it all the way back to Ilya. So I'm nice that we could reconnect here at the end.
That is amazing. Todd Reardon joining us. So one last thought. You talked about the postseason and, of course, how important it is for your team to play big and to be physical. The team also had a defenseman, Brendan Dillon. This is a big guy with playoff experience. Tom Wilson had made the point that the game is moving towards speed and skill, but when you get to the postseason, quote, good old hockey always seems to come back out, end quote. So my question then, Todd, how valuable is it to have a guy like Dillon who's going to make sure that every opponent is going to know where he is and that he is there?
Yeah, I think that was a huge add and a great job by Brian McClellan, our GM, of finding the player. I know we spent some time watching him and familiar with him. Another player that I have a back connection with, I coached him in a rookie tournament back in 2009, so I knew the player a little bit as well, and he's done a great job to earn it, you know, to get everything that he's earned in the NHL, and his game really continues to improve as he moves along here. But he's been a great add for us, and definitely agree with Tom Wilson. I think that there's, you know, in terms of how our roster is built, it's definitely not a very fun team to play against, and especially as playoff hockey becomes a little bit tighter, more structured. I think now you can use and you know, some of your physicality and speed and you know, in that way, and I think we have a unique blend of it, and I think that we're going to be a very difficult out for whoever gets us this year because of the brand of hockey we want to play. It's our identity. It's something that we've done this year, and we've had success doing it, and I think it even becomes more prominent as you go into the playoffs because you're playing seven games against the same opponents. And now if you continue to invest physically against that team every night, it's just a matter of time until they break. As long as you can stay healthy and obviously get a few bounces your way. That was quite similar to the path that we used 2 years ago to ultimately raise the greatest prize in hockey.
So good to talk hockey, specifically Caps hockey. The head coach, he's in his second season there. He won Stanley Cups with Pittsburgh and Washington. Washington is in first in the Metro Division, and they're taking on Minnesota on Sunday. Todd, so good to have you back. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
All right, Jim, I really appreciate you having me on. Hopefully 1 year and one day from now next year as well.
And not only does he like to gamble, it's one thing to like it, he's actually pretty good at it. So, I don't want to be a pig with the intel. I want to share it with you. And this is why, on occasion, I bring in my guy, James Kelly, a.k.a. the Flight Deck. Bring it on in here, Deck. He's here on Fridays. There's a lot of action going into the weekend. Why not bring this guy in?
We're going ballistic, man.
We are. Watch your head.
Okay, man. Let's turn and burn.
He's coming in. He's James Kelly. He's been on the staff for a number of years. He works one day a week, or he works in studio one day a week. Plug in, bro. JK, what's cracking, dude?
Not much, Jim.
Seriously, all kidding aside, my man. How big is your head?
7 5/8.
So that makes your hat size what, an 11?
Extra, extra large, and I only weigh 150 pounds. That's pretty impressive for a 150-pound man.
That's got to be tough. If I've said it once, I've said it a million times. Hat size is not show fodder.
I love the jersey. You like by that? By chance, yeah.
Pretty tight, right?
Might have to hit it.
You might have to hit it. Is that what you just said? All right, so we're off and running. He just said, I might have to hit Monmouth. Let's do what you're here to do, and that's make some money. As a reminder, these picks are for entertainment purposes only. All right, so why don't we start in the association? You've got the Nuggets and the Clips. Tonight at Staples, L.A. has got a chance to pull even with the Nuggets for second overall in the Western Conference. The line is Clippers minus six. Now, I know you've had some trouble wrapping your world-class dome around this one. Who are you leaning to on a number like that?
This is the toughest game of the weekend to call because neither team has been at full strength all year, and now, finally, they are at full strength. So analytics and numbers aren't very helpful right now, so I have to go off of the better roster, which would be the Clippers. Sorry, Denver fan, you guys are good. You're going to be very good in the next couple years, but the Clippers are better. I still think they will cover the 6 points. Kawhi kind of got on them after two games ago. They're on a two-game winning streak, and they're playing a lot better. And their new guys, Marcus Morris, Reggie Jackson, those guys are actually doing their role right now. So I'll take the Clippers minus six.
You feel good about that? Or you're hoping?
I don't feel great about it, but I'm going to hit it.
Clippers minus six. He's going to hit it. All right, so a non-bet would mean he's not feeling good about it. The other big game in the association, that voice and that head, belong to James Kelly. The other big game in the association this weekend, you've got Houston at Boston. Both teams are playing well of late. The Rockets have been playing really well since they made some major changes to their roster. They're now the third choice. Let's go at this differently. They're the third choice in the Western Conference behind the Lakers, who are plus 125. The Clippers are at plus 190. This is in the West, not for the NBA title, but for the West. The Rockets now are plus 700. Have they played well enough for you to see value in that? Would you hit them at plus 700 in the West?
They're trending that way. They're playing small ball now. They're 9-2 since they made the changes. The biggest change out of all of it, I think, is Westbrook. He is minimizing his three-point shots. He's attacking the rim. And when they're doing that, they can be there. I don't think I will hit it, though. I still think the Clippers are a better team. I'd actually probably hit the plus 190 for the Clippers to come out of the West. But the Rockets, they're really, really good. And it's not a small ball thing. If this does fail, it's more of a defensive matchup against the Clippers or something like that. Because the Clippers, they're just more versatile from 1 through 8. They got so many guys they could throw at them. Westbrook, Harden defensively. I just don't think they could do it.
He likes the Clippers at plus 190. All right, James Kelly in studio. As far as the NBA MVP odds go, how about this? Giannis has moved to a minus 455 favorite to repeat. LeBron and Luka both had pretty good weeks. Luka is second at plus 800. LeBron is plus 900, right?
Right.
Is there any value in either one of those guys, or has Giannis wrapped this up already?
Like you said, LeBron and Luka have been remarkable. LeBron at 35 years old is doing stuff he's never done. He's going to lead the league in assists. He's never done that before. He was good against Boston this week. He was even better against the Pelicans when he went for 40 against Zion and them. But no, this is a wrap. Giannis is going to win this thing. He won it last year. He's having a better statistical year this year than he had last year. And not only that, his team's trending towards 70 wins this year. So it's a wrap. It's over. I'm not hitting it. Giannis wins this thing.
All right, stay away from that. Let's go to the NFL really quickly. Let me hit you up on a really interesting prop bet in the NFL draft for the draft. The Redskins have the second pick overall. Almost anybody, pundit, draft, or otherwise, has them taking Ohio State's Chase Young. Are you completely sold on Chase in that spot, or can you make an argument for somebody else for the Redskins at number 2 overall?
I'm completely sold on Chase Young as being a dominant football player. He is a unbelievable edge rusher. He's going to be good for years to come. He's the real deal.
Is there a butt coming?
There's a butt coming. It's coming. I could do it right now. I'm going to actually not do that. I'm going to hit plus 300 with Tua.
You are not.
I am. It just makes too much sense. I mean, they had the second overall pick. There's a new regime. Ron Rivera. He could cut his... I mean, he's not married to Dwayne Haskins.
Hot take expert. Are you kidding me? You think the Redskins will take Tua, and you'd actually hit that?
They have to.
Are you going
to
hit that?
I am going to hit it. I'm absolutely going to hit it. They have to. They have to sit there. They have to think. I mean, this is a long-term thing here. Ron Rivera had Cam Newton for years. He knows what it means to have a franchise quarterback. You have one shot to get Tua. You have to do it. You have to follow what Arizona did last year, trend-setting stuff. It's like Kyler Murray, Josh Rosen. try to get rid of Haskins. I still think Haskins could be okay. Tua's just the man right there.
I want
to
be very clear about this. Like, you can get on the air and say crazy bleep just to get people to look at you, but are you saying to me that you will hit that? You will put money at plus 300?
Yes, that's great odds. I actually will. And we're still, what, 2 months out from the actual draft? It'll start going that way shortly. Everybody's on Chase right now. I'm telling you, it's going to start. There's going to be a lot more Tua talk than there has been.
Okay, now the weird thing about Tom Brady, I did this rant earlier this week where I just don't give a damn. I really don't care. I don't want to hear anything else. I don't want to hear any more alerts or updates and breathtaking breaking news. It just does not matter. None of this matters to me right now because it all benefits him. But, of course, there are numbers about where he might end up. Let's talk for this for a minute. The Pats are the front runners, minus 125. The Raiders are the second choice at plus 225. The Titans are the third choice at plus 600. Indy is next. And then you've got the Chargers fifth. Do you feel strongly enough about anybody other than the Pats to hit that?
I don't feel strongly enough about anybody but the Pats. The 125, these great sources that keep leaking out this great news keep helping that line. So I like the Pats. I like the minus 125. I just, history shows, man. It's Peyton Manning, he left because of Andrew Luck. Joe Montana leaves because of Steve Young. The Slinger leaves because of Aaron Rodgers. Tom Brady is staying there. This is the most overblown freaking story of the entire offseason. Jim, he's 43 years old. They're acting like this is like a 23-year-old Patrick Mahomes for how much freaking news this keeps getting. There's no way this guy's leaving, especially the AFC West. For the Raiders?
I think there's two issues right here. Yeah. The giant head is settling in. There's two issues here right now. Number one, and your point, is he's not going anywhere. And number two, what is with all the breathless reporting? He's a 43-year-old guy.
That's exactly right. And I would love to see
this helping you make your
guy.
Point, because I'm better at it than you are.
You're much better than I am at that. But, yes.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point, though. Oh, yeah, you made a good point. Before you go, the XFL. Now, you've had some success with the XFL. Number one, how have you had success with the XFL, and are there any games that interest you this weekend?
The first couple of weeks I was all over DC Defenders and Cardale Jones. Good thing I didn't hit him last week. This week I'm going to Houston Roughnecks. Our guy June Jones, he's playing good. I'm going to go with the quarterback PJ Walker and his wideout Cam Phillips. Their defense, opportunistic.
What's the number?
But it's a minus one against at Dallas, so I'm going to hit the Houston Roughnecks minus one.
I hope you got all that down because we are running out of time. Sorry. What do you feel best about? You've got the Clippers minus six. You don't feel great about that.
I might add Oklahoma City plus 11 tonight against the Bucks.
You might?
Yeah. I did actually. I just hit it.
Plus 11 the Bucks.
Best team in the NBA against the spread this year is the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Howard Beck is my guest. Good to have you back. Howard, how are you?
Doing well, Romy. How are you?
Good, good. Howard,
it's been a big week for Red Vines.
Dude, you know I was going to start there. You know there's only one place I could start this week. When you are the undisputed Red Vine king of the entire world, what is your reaction when you see the other king, at least the king of the NBA, LeBron James, enjoying a Red Vine after his 40-point performance against New Orleans?
I mean, obviously, I could be nothing but pleased, Rome. It's a great, great day for all of Red Vine Nation. It's a big moment for the movement. It's the endorsement we've all been waiting for. And I think the only troubling part of it was that so many people mistook, and I'm gonna assume it's innocent, but they mistook the Red Vine for a Twizzler, which is, of course, an inferior product. And for those who mixed it up, who got the name wrong, who misunderstood, misconstrued, I forgive them, but just get it right. That was absolutely a Red Vine. Give LeBron James credit for having the right taste.
I'm so glad you said that. I mean, licorice, not all licorice is created equally. Red Vines and Twizzlers are not the same thing, are they, Howard?
They're absolutely not the same thing. There's an east-west divide here, I'm convinced, because Red Vines are from the Bay Area, where I grew up, and definitely I grew up on Red Vines. I live on the East Coast now in New York, and people here, they only know Twizzlers. So I understand the confusion, but they're not the same thing. And anybody who uses that interchangeably, like people who say Kleenex for every like tissue product, it's not. These are different things. This is not, someone tried to tell me it's like saying soda versus saying pop, but those things refer to the same can of beverage. Twizzlers and Red Vines, they're just different things, Jim.
Such a good point. It's like grocery store versus market. I mean, they're not one and the same. Howard Beck setting the record straight. All right, so what about LeBron? LeBron is 35, Howard. He's got this many miles on his legs. He's still playing at this level. How is he playing at this level? Is it the power of the Red Vines, and can he keep it up for four more months?
I would like to think it's absolutely the power of the Red Vines, and that if I, too, just simply consumed enough of them, I could sustain the same kind of production. It's interesting because there's no baseline here, right? There's no precedent. There have been other players who have gotten to year 17, other superstars who have been still productive at that age, but not at this level, at this level of usage, level of minutes, and level of just dominance still. And, part of it is just the age we're in. Modern medicine and training and also LeBron just being a freak of nature, all of these things are, I think, part of it. And then there's the fact that he did have a lighter load than usual last season because his season got cut short, and he didn't make a run to June for the first time in nearly a decade. So is he fresher? That's probably part of it. I think also, we know how diligent he is with his training. My only concern, Jim, is one where I just think the laws of physics come into play at some point. Can LeBron go at this level of intensity offensively and defensively through an entire regular season just to have the Lakers positioned where they are and still have enough left in May and June? Because obviously this team wants to be playing that deep. So I don't know what the toll is. I don't know, these are impossible things to know, even with all the sports science we have. But what he's doing is absolutely remarkable given how deep into his career he is and how many miles he's got on him.
I agree with you, and I didn't even see him doing it. As great as he is, I did not see him playing at this level the way he has for the first half and beyond of this season. But, Howard, what about, and we'll see how it plays out and we'll see what he has left, but what about the roster around him? For instance, they've got the best record in the West, but at the same time, they did not get anybody at the trade deadline. They were unable to convince Darren Collison to come out of retirement. So as you look at their roster right now, what would be your biggest concern for them in the postseason?
If LeBron is at his peak, if he's playing the way that he's playing now in April, May, and presumably June, and Anthony Davis is healthy and doing the same thing too, then the answer to the question may be there is no concern because they do have good, solid guys around them, and they're obviously a very capable team. They've got the record that they do. The concern I've always had was, and it remains, is if LeBron has to be your primary playmaker at all times that he's on the court – and your primary scorer, and does everything else that he does and anchors your defense, and you don't have anybody to turn to on a night when he needs a breather or on a night when, for whatever reason, he's a little off, that's where the concern is. And they don't have that guy. They don't have either the third star or the backup point guard because LeBron's essentially their point guard. There's just nobody else to lean on, whereas with the Clippers, Lou Williams on any given night can drop the 25 points that Kawhi or Paul George doesn't if those guys aren't available or if they're in foul trouble or whatever. The Lakers just don't have that other guy. They don't have great depth. They've got good, solid supporting players, but they just don't have a lot of room for error.
Howard Beck is my guest. Howard, you mentioned the Clippers. So the Clippers get the Morris that everybody wanted at the deadline, but they still go through stretches where they lose to teams that they really should not lose to. Is that worrying to you, or do you look at the fact that when they're fully healthy, they are really good and really dangerous?
I think on paper, they are the deepest team. And picking up Reggie Jackson, Marcus Morris, yeah, the fit isn't necessarily ideal with either one, and those are both guys who can be a little ball dominant at times. But it just gives them that many more weapons, that many more guys they can go to, and especially these next couple of months as you're just kind of winding down the regular season, you don't have to lean on your main guys as much when you've got that kind of depth. So it'll help them now. Whether those guys are critical in the playoffs or not, we'll see. Although Marcus Morris in particular was a great pickup in part because he's yet one more strong guy, one more body you can throw at LeBron James defensively on top of having Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and Montrezl Harrell and everybody else. So I like what the Clippers have. They've been a little weird, a little up and down the last several weeks, last month or so. Some of that is just it's been a choppy season. Paul George missed a ton of games. Kawhi Leonard with his load management. Patrick Beverley's missed games. So some of it's just been that you've got these major new pieces in the two stars that they brought in, plus you're bringing in buyout guys now or trade deadline guys. I think they're just still trying to kind of like find their rhythm and get the rotation set, but they've got some time.
Howard, there are a number of things that I wanted to hit you with, that I could hit you with, but I want to end this by going right to one other thing. You recently had Greg Oden on your podcast. What was that conversation like, and what's your sense as to where he is now in life?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking me about that. I had never met Greg Oden, as it happens, but I got in touch with him through the Retired Players Association at All-Star Weekend, and it was the first time that Greg Oden had ever been to All-Star Weekend, and he could not have been happier to be there. Greg Oden obviously went through a lot of things in his career, not least of which was all those knee surgeries that cut short his career, but he's also battled alcoholism and substance abuse, but he's clean. He's in a great place right now. He's married. He's got a young daughter. He's happy. He's just in a very good place. He's working with a company that helps advise athletes on their finances. I think he's done a little coaching here and there. And it was just a really wonderful conversation. He's a bright, thoughtful guy who's really grounded, who understands where he's been. And like, there's no bitterness there. He's just in a very good place mentally. And so it was just great to have that conversation with him as a guy who, you know, people are always going to consider as, you know, as a bust. And they're going to use that word because he was drafted number one overall and his career ended prematurely. And it's a sad story in that sense, but it's an inspiring story in that he's come back from all that. And he was in a really dark place. And if people want to know more, aside from my podcast, I would encourage people to Google Greg Oden and the Indianapolis Star, because the Star did a phenomenal feature on him about a year ago that documented a lot of his just climbing back out of that dark place and overcoming his substance abuse. But a great conversation with him. I enjoyed it immensely. If people want to go look at my podcast, The Full 48, they can find that there as well.
Extremely well done by you, Howard, and I couldn't respect or appreciate him any more than I do for the way he has come back and battled back and the way he's embraced his life. He is a senior NBA writer at Bleacher Report. He is the host of the Full 48 podcast. Look for that. The Red Vine King of the World, friend of the program, Howard Beck. Great job, Howard. Appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Romy, you're the best. Thanks, man.
You, dude. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the jungle. A very good Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. You know, it's been roughly 36 hours since Tyson Fury did what he did on Saturday night, and frankly, I still cannot believe it. Yeah! Total physical, mental, and psychological domination. Right down to the moment where he appeared to be licking Wilder's blood off his neck. Kevin Ioli, when he came out sitting on the throne, wearing a crown and singing Crazy.
That entrance by Fury was spectacular. It was epic. I mean, the place went nuts.
Jose Wilder's corner was throwing in the towel.
I get it. I understand that Wilder might be pissed, but that was the right call.
You know, I'm ready to go out on my shield, man.
Better to have wounded pride than a damaged brain. Bob in Jacksonville.
I am actually flabbergasted. That fight was so fixed, other people can't see that.
They were already contractually obligated to a third fight. Why would they need to fix it?
Do you remember the Max Bear Primo Carnera fight?
And slabbergasted. LeBron back and Brown in. 15-foot follow-away. Good! And that's a little dream shake for you. Perfectly executed. And yes, I would happily take 7 more games like that one. Milkshake Monday! It's Monday somewhere. We are efforting Derek Brown. We'll run him down.
Run
sooner than later.
Down.
Derek Brown joining us. I'm glad you mentioned family. Always leave things better than you found them.
I didn't really realize it back in high school because I was kind of like, man, like, yeah, Dad, all right, I got it. And then I remember like, my sophomore year in college, I was like, I finally get what my dad's saying.
Kobe always said she was me.
I certainly hope that it helped Vanessa and the Bryant family just a little bit. I know it helped Los Angeles, Southern California, and Laker fans everywhere.
I have to look at another crime meme for the Knicks.
And then joining us, the team and Phillip Rivers were parting ways.
I tell you what, we're going to miss it. Just his personality, his work ethic. He's a pro's pro.
I quit crying!
You're blaming the costume. But I'm going to say that was because there was a massive human being standing in front of him, backing him up and pounding him. Chris Mannix joining us.
He's basically playing the blame game bingo. The outfit, and then it's Mark Breland, and Anthony Durrell yelling at ringside, and the referee stunk.
Emails.
Happy Fat Tuesday. Signed, Benny in Frisco Burger. Mikey de la Creme Brulee. Mike D for three, Helpings. Leff in Lasagna. Holly in Indigestion. This year, it's Joe Burrow. His hands came in at 9 inches.
No!
Sound the small handler because Joe Burrow's career is over. Pete Prisco. Jackass, run from back of plane alert.
As soon as the plane lands, seatbelt off, he goes racing to the front because he's got to get off the plane quicker than everybody else.
Jerk move.
This dishonest horse is...
Daniel Jeremiah joining us.
Who is ultra, like, twitched up with his feet, with his release, with his mind, like, seeing things really quickly. Have you ever played cards? He's like a card dealer. Like, just shooting those cards out across the table. Like, that's kind of how he plays.
Forget about the day I got married. To hell with the days my kids were born. The single greatest day of my life, Jim, is all set to take place on Saturday, April 11th, 2020. When the proud, shiny, up-and-coming city of Buffalo, New York becomes the center of the jungle universe.
I need you lower!
What an incredible move by Kirby Smart in Georgia. I just know how you let that guy get away. Right now, Georgia's a Bentley. Scott Cochran's just going to put spinners on that thing.
I'm just going to put spinners on that thing.
He went to a Disturbed concert rocking a shirt which said, I need a kidney. Somebody saw and donated a kidney? That is incredible.
Oh, wow.
Wow, this is a very rabid, very loyal fan base that goes back decades.
Double lunch.
It's heart disease!
I have never seen anybody that ugly in my life with that much confidence.
Huh? Man, this so crazy, man.
So exactly where do you come out on the new CBA?
That
quit beating around the bush, Marquise.
Man, that's
stop dancing around the issue. Do not stand behind the door on this one. Let us have the truth.
The Pouncer Twins vote no.
How old are those boys now?
The boys are now 18 and 15.
Oh,
oldest
my
son.
God. You and I wrestle, I would kick your butt right now. I'm probably burning 1,000 calories walking. But don't you think a little belly is cute, too?
Why is it that these gazillion-dollar players get injured, and yet nobody ever seems to mention the trainer? What's up with that?
Okay.
Wreck
her. Yeah. Adult kickball. Yo, bro, how long before you run an adult hopscotch league?
Together we can make kickball great again.
He throws a dunk and then talks
I've been saying a lot of cool things in my life, but maybe nothing as cool as this. I have not worn a jersey since I was 12, and now I've got the Pappas jersey on. And man, I can feel the power.
Oh, I'm so happy for that.
Anytime, Jim. Appreciate you having me. Thanks.
Well, there's an ME in that
Tell the wife I said hello to.
Amputation may be necessary.
Flabbergasted.
The mom is hot.
Is that a Big Ben or Matt Patricia throwing?
So I hope you tweet this out and tag the league.
Hopefully 1 year and one day from now, next year as well.
And can taste that fart in my mouth right now. Okay, I'm not going to finish that thought.
Invigorating. Exhilarating.
I'm out.
You can't retire ever.
Best team in the NBA against the spread this year is the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Hey. Good night now! Good night now!